hope you enjoy this message from South City C3, a location of C3 Church, Christchurch.
Now, what if I told you this morning that one of the most spiritually impactful moments of my entire life started with a burrito? You guys know what a burrito is? It's the best kind of Mexican food. And about 4 years ago, I was living in Kansas City, back in the States, and at the time of this story, I was having a little bit of a tough day. Because you see, my car, the day before, had started leaking a little bit of oil. And within a day's time, that small leak of oil became a flood. And as I managed to get this car kind of limping to the auto mechanic, I found out that that leaking oil was a symptom of a problem that was going to cost $2,100. Pretty expensive when you're on a university student salary. So as I handed the man behind the counter my FPOS card, I comforted myself in the fact that, well, I do have at least one spare kidney that I could always sell if things get really hard. Needless to say, I went home that morning feeling a little bit defeated, and I kind of spiraled the rest of the day, and I was kind of in a grumpy, irritable sort of mood. And my wife was out that evening, so I was kind of on my own for dinner. And I thought, well, I could cook, but I just don't have the motivation today. So I'm going to go out and get myself the most comforting food that I can think of, a burrito. Now, at the beginning of each month, my wife gives me an envelope that contains all of my spending money for the month. And I just so happened to have $10 left in this envelope. And that $10 could get me a delicious burrito from Chipotle, which is a restaurant in America that I'm quite convinced sources their burritos directly from the New Jerusalem. Okay, they're really, really good burritos. And so I go into this restaurant. The wonderful staff rolls together my wonder of a burrito. And at the end, I go to the end of the line, and I hand the guy behind the cash register my $10 note. And then he says something kind of unexpected. He goes, "Hey, man, our restaurant likes to show appreciation to our customers, and so from time to time, we like to just give away a free meal to some of our customers." And so he said, "Tonight, your burrito's on us." All of a sudden, in that moment, instantly, I hear the voice of God rise up in my chest and say, "You're welcome." And I don't know if it was the fact that the Lord spoke that to me or if it was just because I was having a really hard day, but for some reason, that act of kindness just blasted through all my defenses. And all of a sudden, I'm getting all emotional in front of this cashier guy. And you can tell, like, as the tears begin to form at the corners of my eyes, you can tell he's slightly starting to regret his decision to give me a free burrito. So I'm having a hard time saying anything because I'm a little bit choked up. And so this guy is kind of uncomfortable. He says, do you think you'll need a bag? And I said, "No, I'm okay." And so I just walked out of there with my burrito before I could lose any more man points in front of this guy. Now, that might seem silly to you, but when I got back to my car, I was overcome with a sense of God's kindness towards me. Here I was having a terrible day and feeling sorry for myself. And the Lord knew that what I really needed in that moment was simply a good burrito. Never again would I underestimate the spiritual power of burritos. Now, that moment had a profound impact on me. I still think about it from time to time, not just because it was a great burrito, even though it was. I think about it because it reminds me of the fact that the God that I love cares about the little things. And in that moment, Jesus revealed himself to me as a servant who loves and serves us in the big things and little things, even when we don't deserve it. And this morning, I want to take a look with you guys at another story where Jesus revealed something amazing about himself. Because although he was fully God, when Jesus came, he humbled himself and took on the form not of a noble king, but of a lowly servant. And according to the Bible, it's really important that you know Jesus as the God who comes to serve. So if you guys got your Bibles with you this morning, go ahead and turn with me to the book of John, chapter 13. And we're just going to be kind of camping out on this passage, and so once you get there, just feel free to leave your Bible open, and we'll visit the passage a couple of times throughout the message. So in verse 1 it reads, "It was just before the Passover festival, and Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God." So, it's the night before Jesus is about to go to the cross. He is fully aware of the fact that within 24 hours, he is going to be whipped until his skin is shredded. He's going to be beaten. He's going to be spit upon. And finally, he's going to hang on a Roman cross. Up until this point, he's lived all of his life doing ministry and loving and serving the people around him, knowing that each thing that he did, each step of the way, was bringing him closer and closer to his date with destiny at the cross. But Jesus didn't just wait around for this destiny to unfold. He spent his life doing what he does best, loving people. And Jesus loved a lot of people, but in particular, he loved a group of 12 boys from Israel. He had interrupted their ordinary lives with an invitation to go on a journey into something extraordinary. Fishers of fish would become fishers of men. And these students, these 12 disciples of Jesus, would be taught the ways of the kingdom, not as slaves, but as friends. And so on the night before the high point of Jesus' work upon the earth, we are told that Jesus loved these 12 disciples to the very end. Through travels, through miracles, through crowds, through angry Pharisees, through their successes, and through their failures, Jesus never once faltered in his love for these 12 disciples. They were his people. They were his friends. And so on this most fateful of nights, around a humble dinner table, Jesus knows for certain he is going to die. And so he does what any person does when they know that their death is approaching. They gather around the people that they care the most about in this world to be with them. A dinner is hosted, one last supper together before Jesus must walk to his fate alone. As they begin sharing this meal, Jesus would have known that the devil had already led Judas, one of his most beloved disciples, to betray him. And as people on the table ate and drank, Jesus knew that the events that would lead him to the cross were, because of Judas, set in motion and could not be undone. Perhaps there was even a moment where Judas met Jesus' eye around the dinner table and saw for a moment the spark of sad knowing of what Judas was about to do. And yet John tells us that Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. He had come from God and he was returning to God. And in the face of the painful death that most certainly awaited him, Jesus trusted the goodness of the plan that was unfolding because he trusted in the goodness of his Father. Jesus had certainty. And to try to imagine how valuable that certainty was, can you think of a time in your life when you went through something challenging? Maybe it was the loss of a loved one. Or maybe it was a time when money was really tight and you didn't know how things were going to work out. And if in that situation you had known the way that things were going to work out, would it have made it easier? Maybe. Maybe it would have. It might not have made the actual situation itself less unpleasant to go through. But sometimes the hardest part of going through a tough time is the uncertainty that surrounds it. And in this case, Jesus knew how the plan was going to work out. He knew who he was, and he knew the end of the story. So the meal carries on. Everyone is eating, drinking, and perhaps sharing a few laughs around the table, when all of a sudden everybody starts to get kind of quiet, because Jesus has just stood up. And to see what happens next, let's take a look at verse 4 in chapter 13. It reads, "So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, 'Lord, are you going to wash my feet?' Jesus replied, 'You do not realize what I'm doing, but later you will understand.' 'No,' said Peter, 'you shall never wash my feet.' And Jesus answered, 'Unless I wash you, you have no part with me.' 'Then, Lord,' Simon Peter replied, 'not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well.'" Now, because none of us in this room are first century Jewish people, it can be a little bit hard for us to appreciate how scandalous this scene is that's just unfolded in this passage. I want you to imagine for a moment that the prime minister has just been invited over to your house for a cup of tea. Now, depending on your political leanings, you might be excited about that or maybe not so excited about that. But I'm guessing that either way, you would at least be hospitable to the leader of New Zealand if they were to come and sit in your lounge. Now, imagine the prime minister comes into your house and she says to you, "Hey, can I get you something to drink?" You'd be like, "Well, that'd be a little bit weird." You'd say, no, of course not. No, have a seat. What would you like to drink? Here, have a Tim Tam. I know you love those sort of things." That might just be me projecting. And then imagine if you're sitting your tea and you're having a conversation, and all of a sudden Jacinda herself gets up and goes to the loo and begins scrubbing your toilet. Would that make you slightly uncomfortable? Yeah, well, of course it would. Why? Because scrubbing toilets is a lowly job that you would never ask any of your guests to do, let alone the leader of New Zealand herself. Now, if it was Donald Trump that we were talking about, you might say, "Hey, scrub away, my friend. I think you missed a spot over there." That's beside the point. The point is this: we have a normal desire to look after and serve those who are of a higher status than ourselves. And with that in mind, you can then perhaps imagine what it was like when Jesus did the most socially uncomfortable thing he could have done at this Last Supper. Because Jesus was the most esteemed person in the room. He was the great teacher and Lord. And when he stood up, every eye in the room would have been upon him to see what he was about to do. They certainly would have been curious when they watched him take off his outer garments, lay them aside, and wrap a towel around his waist. And that curiosity would have quickly turned to awkwardness as Jesus went over and began filling the bowl of water that was used for washing people's feet. They would have started exchanging uncomfortable glances with each other as he brought the bowl over and approach the first disciple. What is he doing? Without saying anything, Jesus began to do the job that the lowest servant would do. He began to scrub the dirt from his disciples' feet. One by one, he goes around the table, the social tension building with each pair of feet that Jesus scrubs the dirt off of. And then he arrives in front of Peter. And Peter is stunned. "Jesus, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus tells Peter, "What I'm doing right now, Peter, you may not understand it, but one day you will understand." And then Peter says one of the most arrogant and ugly things he's ever said. "No, you shall never wash my feet." Maybe Peter thought he was being spiritual. Probably thought he was just being respectful to the great teacher. But here's the thing. What Peter was expressing in that moment was an attitude of independence. He was saying, I don't need you to wash my feet. He was missing the point entirely. Jesus was revealing something beautiful about his nature to serve, and he was also modeling the attitude that all who would have to follow him must have towards serving, which is this: the greatest among you must become your servant. And Jesus is so firm on this that when Peter refuses to let him wash his feet, he draws a line in the sand and says, if you don't let me wash your feet, you cannot be a part of what I am doing. Essentially, Jesus is saying, Peter, if you don't let me serve you and learn to receive my gift of love, then you misunderstand everything about who I am and what I've come to do, and you are therefore no longer able to be my messenger. Being served by Jesus is a requirement for anyone who wants to follow him. Why is that? We love him because he first loved us, and we serve him because he first served us. Now, Peter's probably taken aback by how strong Jesus' response is to him. So he does a complete 180, does the smart thing. And he decides to try the opposite approach. He says, well, Lord, if you're going to wash my feet, don't stop there. Wash my hands and my head as well. And one thing you got to love about Peter, he might be a little bit on the slow side, but once he catches on, he's all in. Jesus' response to Peter tells us that we must let him serve us if we want to be a part of his kingdom. Well, what does it mean for us to let Jesus come and serve us? Well, it means that you have to be willing to have your feet washed. And that requires a certain humility to allow somebody to take your dirty feet in their hands and scrub the dirt from them. And the same is true for our relationship with God. We have to have an attitude that recognizes that, hey, we've got some dirt on us and we need to be washed. And if our attitude is like Peter's, where we say, no, I don't need you to wash my feet, what we're really saying to God is, that's okay, God, I've got this. I don't really need your help. And the only problem with that is that we can't get clean without him. When we learn to surrender and invite God to come with his Spirit and wash us, we are then able to experience his love, which inspires us to then go and love and serve other people. Now, the easiest way for us to know if our heart is approaching this with the right attitude is to look at the way that you approach serving other people. Because there's two approaches that you can take. We can serve like workers, or we can serve like lovers. When you serve with a worker attitude, what you're saying is, I am only doing this for what I can get out of it. I will only serve in this way as long as it continues to benefit me. And that approach comes from seeing serving like Peter did in that moment, with an attitude of independence. But when you serve with the attitude of a lover, what you're saying is, I am doing this for the good of someone else. And I will continue to love and serve that person, even if they don't deserve it, because Jesus loves them dearly. And when we approach serving in that way, we see service like Jesus does, with an attitude of dependence. Jesus served with the attitude of a lover. He washed the feet of his disciples that night because he loved them dearly. And it was that same love that then drove him to go to the cross and pay for their redemption the following day with his very own blood. Take a look with me at verse 12 in our passage. It reads, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set an example for you that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. You know, my wife Sarah and I used to be a part of a ministry back in the States called the International House of Prayer. And one of the things that they do there is they run a prayer room 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And part of our requirement for us as students in their Bible school was to spend 24 hours a week in that prayer room. And I think the hope there was that somehow the word that was being taught in our classes would somehow go from the form of knowledge in our head and move down to our heart and take root in the form of love. But here's the thing that struck me about that time is right from the start, the same teachers who would call us as a class to go into that prayer room and give it our all in the place of prayer, they were the same people that showed up at 6 a.m. every morning and went hard right there with us. And you know, there's something really powerful when a leader truly lives out what they preach. It stirs our hearts in a different way because it says that their message is something that's worth living out. And that's what Jesus is doing for his disciples here. He's saying, guys, you call me teacher and Lord, and if that's true about me, then you ought to do as I've done and go and wash the feet of others just as I have washed yours. Jesus is saying that in his kingdom, no matter how high of a position of authority that you attain, you never get to graduate from servanthood. And we're to follow his example in living lives of service to others. We must wash the feet of others because Jesus has washed our feet. And there's a lot of different ways you can go about serving. You could go off to a distant land and preach the gospel. You could wash somebody's car. You could hold the door open for somebody. You could buy somebody some groceries, or you could give your wife that foot massage that she's been asking for the last few weeks. What is important is not what we do to serve, but the attitude of love that we do it with. Got one more story for you guys before I close. My dad worked at a factory for 17 years. And in that first few years that he worked there, he very quickly got promoted up the ranks and became the supervisor of the entire plant. And that didn't sit well with everybody who worked there because there were some people who had been there longer who felt like, you know, I should have probably got that promotion first. And so it changed his relationship with all of his workmates. But with one guy in particular, things went pretty far south. We'll call this guy John. Now, John was not happy with my dad. And over time, things continued to break down between the two of them. And John became increasingly hostile and bitter. He was spreading rumors about my dad and just kind of being plain mean. At one point, they nearly ended up in a fist fight. So it was not a good situation. But then something happened that changed everything. At 49 years old, my dad met Jesus. And my dad's early passion for Jesus began causing him to change in a lot of ways. And at one point, he started to ask God, is it time for me to leave this place and go on to something else? And every time he'd hear God say, no, no, there's something I want to do through you still. And so he continued working, but things were different. He'd read his Bible during his lunch break, and he'd offer to pray for his coworkers when they'd be going through a tough time. And his whole attitude began to change, and I'm proud to say that he began looking less like a supervisor to his workmates and more like a servant. And people noticed. They started warming up to my dad. Everybody, that is, except for John. John was as cold as ever. And my dad figured if Jesus' love was enough to win him over, then surely it was enough to win John over. And so he did the only thing that made sense to do. He decided he would start serving John. And so he would look for ways to make John's life easier at work. And he did this extravagantly. So a few months went by, and then a few years, and my dad fought discouragement and continued to press in to love this guy. And then one day, after years of knocking on this door, the door opened. It was a frigid winter day in northern Michigan, and John was taking out the rubbish. And my dad came into the room and said, "Hey, why don't you just leave that by the door? I'll take that out for you. It's no problem." And so John, without saying a word, left it there and turned to leave. And so my dad went back to his desk, and then he noticed after a moment that John hadn't left. And so he turns and he looks, and John's standing there looking at him. He goes, "Everything okay, John?" And John just looks at him and says, "Why are you so nice to me? I don't understand it. I've been ignoring you for years. Something's different about you. Why are you so nice to me?" My dad said, "There is something different about me, because I've become a Christian, and Jesus, the God that I serve, calls us to love and serve other people, and I guess I'm doing my best to try to walk that out with you." So John pauses, takes that on board, and says, "Oh, okay. Well, I guess I want you to know thanks. It was kind of awkward, so John sort of shuffled out of the room, and so my dad kind of awkwardly went back to his work at his desk, and you know, it was a humble start, but that was the beginning of something amazing, because after that, those guys began talking every single day. They'd share about life, share about the Bible, and they were genuinely enjoying each other. And it was through a series of small acts of serving day by day over the course of a period of time that two men who once looked like they would always be enemies had suddenly begun to look a lot more like friends. My dad's journey with John reminds me of the power of serving. When it was next to impossible to show love through words, my dad was able to see a heart change through his accents or through his actions. And my dad had his feet washed by Jesus, and it inspired him to go wash the feet of someone else. And that's how Jesus calls us to love and serve. Because he loved us when we didn't deserve it. He washed our feet when it should have been us washing his.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. To learn more about our church, visit c3chch.org.